Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for coming to this session. I would like to present to you Dan Bielefeld. Dan, take it away, please.
Thank you. In North Korea, those in trouble with the authorities sometimes disappear and are never seen again. Others are publicly executed, but their bodies are not returned to their families. For the last 4 years, we at the Transitional Justice Working Group have interviewed over 600 North Koreans who have escaped from their country and then resettled in South Korea. So we're doing our work in Seoul. We focus on documenting three main types of sites. One, where are the victims of the government? Where are they killed? Where are they buried? And then where are documents that might be related to all of this? So just very briefly, I'm going to talk about a little bit about our project over the last 4.5 years, give a bit of background on the issue, why we're doing this, and how our group and project started, and our goals, and then get into the meat, which is, using free and open source software to do our work, and also using open data to do our work. And we'll talk a little bit about challenges and next steps. Okay, so first, a bit of background. On my screen, it's moving, but on your screen, it's not. Okay, well, here we go. All right. So, in 2013, the UN Human Rights Council created what they call a Commission of Inquiry, a COI, that investigated the human rights situation in North Korea, the DPRK, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. We don't have time to go over their findings very much, but just very briefly, if you had been following what's been going on in North Korea, there was not a whole lot new in their report, but if you had not been following what had been going on and then you were to read this, it's quite shocking. It said, for instance, the gravity, scale, and nature of these violations reveal a state that does not have any parallel in the contemporary world. In the bottom there, the report called for accountability for those, quote, most responsible for the crimes against humanity. So that was our call to action. And in late 2014, several activists, North Korean human rights activists in South Korea, started a new organization called the Transitional Justice Working Group. The head of it is from South Korea, one of our original founders, and our interviewer for the first 3 years of our project, originally himself was from North Korea. Then there's a Canadian guy, there's somebody from the UK, and then myself, I'm from the US. And now our staff is about half and half Korean and foreign or international. Moving quickly, and I will provide links to that report, for example, the COI, at the end. I'll provide links for the things I'm mentioning. So what is transitional justice? This is to try and very quickly describe it is difficult, but basically it's the idea of how does a society, after a period of systemic, widespread, human rights abuses, and then there's a transition. Either the government itself has changed its nature and reformed, or there's a different government. But nonetheless, how do the people in that society, after the transition, how do they move forward and try and, heal and find reconciliation and also perhaps justice? And it's a different answer for every society, but there are definitely, if you study history, there are definitely some better approaches and some other approaches that really didn't work well. So these are some of the mechanisms. Don't have time to talk about it very much. But one thing I want to point out is that we, in our approach, we very much try to be victim-centered. So, and oftentimes in these, even when these types of mechanisms are implemented and there's a lot of well-meaning action going on, oftentimes, the victims' voices or the family members of the victims, they often get sort of set aside, or they don't. So we try and we want to be able to amplify their voices and make sure that they're heard. Now, moving on. So goals of our mapping project, as you know, the COI called for accountability for the those most responsible, i.e. those at the top. So at some point in the future, there probably, and it's not certain, but there probably will be some sort of a trial or a series of trials. So we want to start gathering evidence for that, or gathering victims' stories or victim family members' stories now. We also want to help family members learn the final whereabouts of their loved ones. There are many goals. Many of these actually are for things in the future, but I also want to point out that definitely we're using the information we collect now to do advocacy right now. So, for example, we're going to, in this October, we're going to go to New York, and the UN General Assembly has a, we'll be discussing a resolution on North Korea then, so we want to, we're advocating on behalf of the victims now. Okay, let me continue. All right, so we came out with a report. This is our first report after 2 years. We were very fortunate. We had great media coverage, including the New York Times, Ars Technica, Washington Post. There were lots of other coverage in other languages. Then we came out this year, just 2 months ago, we came out with our second report. You may have seen it sitting over there. You can pick up if you haven't already. Maybe they've already been picked up, which is quite all right with me. I have another copy here, anyone who didn't get one. And there is also like some infographics. There are plenty of those over there as well. So please pick up one of those on your way out if you haven't already. And then also you can download the PDF from our website. I'll show that link near the end. So moving on to the heart of the talk, that was the background. Here are the main tools we use in our mapping work. We don't exclusively use FOSS, I guess, because we are using Google Earth, which is, you know, obviously not an open program, but it does provide us access to the to a lot of imagery that we, you know, which is great for us. I should explain how our interview process works. One of my coworkers sits down with an interviewee, and they have Google Earth in front of them, and as they're talking, if they say, for example, that they did see a public execution, and by the way, like, it's well over 50% of the people we interview have seen them. It's quite common in North Korea. This is a way to instill fear. Then we ask, oh, you have seen a public execution. Are you able to find it here on the imagery? And if they are able to do so, then we record those points in Google Earth. And then the accompanying information right now, we're currently recording that in spreadsheets, the rest of the narrative of the report. But we'll talk more about that in a little bit. Then the good stuff, we use Postgres and PostGIS, which is definitely a match made in heaven, I think. And we do, we do some analysis in there. What else? We do a lot of, querying. We do counting. For our most recent report, I started playing around with clustering. I had not done that before, but that was, depending on which version of PostGIS you have, it's actually can be pretty easy. It's pretty cool. And then moving into QGIS, we do use that obviously for a lot of the visualization and more analysis, and we can bring in base maps and that we've acquired. There's another organization that had published some of their research with, they published a KML file of some of their research, so we can look at it and see how their research and our research overlap or don't overlap. We make our maps in QGIS. So why do we use FOSS? For us, surely, obviously, the price was a factor. And also, I had worked in the States in IT, so I was aware very much of the vendor lock-in issue. And we had looked into ESRI, GIS, At the time, 4 years ago, they had a, they probably still do, I don't know, they have like a nonprofit license for $100 a year. Well, we don't have a lot of money, but we do have that much money, so we could afford that. But thinking about it more, I was like, well, a little bit edgy, because I don't remember exactly what's uncovered in that license, but we don't really know exactly where our project's going to go. This is a decision, you know, not just for this year, but it's the duration of the project, which may be a long time, unfortunately. So it's a budgeting issue for us in the future also. So we, you know, if we discover we need more functionality and we have to pay a lot more for that, that could impact us. So anyway, so these are the reasons we initially came to start using these FOSS products. But then I discovered another reason that I had no idea about until a couple years later. 2 years ago, I went to my first Phosphor G in Boston, and I suddenly discovered, you know, this community, and this was wonderful. So you know, I'm sure, you know, other, you know, there are other proprietary communities out there, but anyway, this was great for me, and being able to, you know, send, you know, emails to the mailing lists and have developers reply, that was pretty exciting for me the first time I did that, with, you know, very helpful, timely information for me. That was great. So, it's not just open software we're using. We are using some open data. As mentioned, we use data, the imagery from Google Earth. I should say that the historical imagery, I don't think I mentioned this earlier, the historical imagery is great for us, because like if this is a public execution that happened, you know, 15 years ago, then if we can go back and look at an image that was, you know, from approximately that time, that provides better, you know, it's better for the interviewer to be able to look at that than something that, you know, is just from now. But anyway, so for open data, we love OpenStreetMap. We use it. Some of you, I'm sure, in this room, some of you must be probably contributors, so thank you. And if anyone has contributed to the North Korean version of OpenStreetMap, or that part of OpenStreetMap, you know, double thank you to you. We're definitely making use of it. Please continue. And I also wanted to acknowledge this project, Global Administrative Areas, which we've made use of too. Okay, challenges. There are lots of them. But this is a mapping conference, so let's talk about some of the challenges of making maps. First of all, we cannot publish coordinates for some of the sites that we record, because if it's a killing site, a public execution site, or if it's a burial site, especially burial sites, we don't want to publish that, because the regime then would just say like, oh, well, they would just easily, if they want to, they would just go and remove the evidence, clean it up. Now, they, of course, for all of these sites, they know where they are, but that list is like this long, and our list is maybe this long. So it would be a big shortcut for them if they know what we know. And if they know that, then, and they clean all that up, you know, then we have nothing. So it's really important that we don't reveal some of the specific locations. But so that has obviously implications for the maps that we can make. So we've approached this two different ways. So here is a map from our most recent report. And anyway, this is, reports of riverbank public execution sites. So we hear these are real points, but what we're not telling you is where in North Korea this happened. So we have basically what we're doing is we're publishing a map without anything that tells you where it happened. But those points are, you know, as we recorded them in our, you know, as the interviewees told them to us. So relatively, they're all, it's a true map, but there's just only one feature that we couldn't just make it completely blank. We had to put something in there. So that's a real river right there. But that's it. So that's, you know, it's not as exciting as a map as it could be. One other point, not about the mapping, but just in terms of the data shown here, just a side note, this is, basically these reports of public executions, cover at least one execution or one report from each decade starting in the 1960s going right through to the current decade. It's like this site has been very active. Another way that we approach this is to aggregate the data. So instead of, you know, putting points on a map, now we just aggregate and we publish a province map. So the left map is from our second report, and then the right hand is from the first report. We had different approaches. I'd like to talk more about these differences, but I think for the sake of time, I need to move on. But so aggregating. Other challenges. Oh, before I move on to other challenges, I do want to say there are some sites that we publish coordinates of. So here, for example, this is, as it says, possible repositories of documentary evidence. This is from our most recent report. And we published for a different town. We published these suspected sites, or sites that we suspect will have, documentary evidence, police stations, court. I don't know, actually, market, that's not... We just put that up there for reference. That's not suspected of having documents. But on the left here, this is China. So this is very northern, this is northern North Korea. Document site is basically a police station, a military installation, something like that. All right, moving on. Another challenge we have is data security. This is, the North Koreans are, they put a lot of resources into their cyber weaponry, if you will. So partly just to make money for the regime, they steal money from the Bank of Bangladesh or something and get $70 million. They do. I think that was maybe 2 years ago. I'm probably wrong on the figure. It might be higher. But anyway, they make money, but they spend some of their they devote some of their cyber resources to targeting North Korean human rights groups and activists and escapees, trying to get their credentials fish their email credentials so they can get into their email, or sometimes even worse, basically malware, spyware attacks, things like that. So one thing that was a challenge for us was the mapping community doesn't know a lot about digital security, and that's not completely true, but of most of the people I've met. And then the digital security experts I met, they don't know a lot about mapping, so it was kind of up to us to figure out how to put that all together. Another thing I want to say that I should say in terms of working with the FOSS communities is that the biggest strength, obviously, is the openness of the community. But because of our threat model, sometimes we can't really always be open about everything that we'd like to be open about. So one quick example of this is I'm using some FOSS software, I love it, and then suddenly I get an error and it says, would you like to report this? And normally if I don't have the threat model I would just say, yes, I want to help the project. I want this feedback to get back to the developer so it helps me and it helps the community. But it's really way more complicated to figure out, to narrow down, to know that I'm not sending anything that could identify me or my network. So that's just one example of how there's a bit of a tension there between working openly and threat model we have. Moving on, next steps. The next thing I'm going to be working on is we need to make a custom application or something to replace the spreadsheets that we have. It's not really an efficient way to work. So there are different ways that we could go about this. There are all kinds of browser-based applications that are represented here, or others. Maybe we could use QGIS forms. Maybe we could make a custom QGIS plugin. I don't know. This is one of the big questions I have here this week. We want to get into digitizing around the sites we record. In other words, we want to be able to say something in a future report, maybe if we're doing more digitizing, maybe we then could say something X number of reports of public executions happened within Y meters of a public, market or of a school, something like that. And then drones. But right now, can't make our own, get our own imagery because not only the North Korean government, the South Korean government, they don't want us doing that. So then, and just to wrap up, so our organization, the head of our group, is very much into collaborating with other groups. And anyway, we that has definitely been our approach. So we have worked with a lot of different, specialists in a lot of different fields. It's very interdisciplinary. If you have an idea that maybe I haven't thought of, or if you are interested and you just want to talk, you know, please find me, whether it's now or I'll be here the rest of the week, or send me an email. And I look forward to collaborating and talking and learning with you. Thank you very much, and I will leave with some links and then have some Q&A.
I know that you mentioned that having the time series for the identification of the locations for the relatives or the victims of the relatives is important. By choosing, you said that having an imagery from a previous period was important. Was there any other factors that led to the choice of Google Earth as of other things, or how do the would the people find other types of map helpful?
Good question. It's just the main thing that we're aware of that we can get in real time, because we don't necessarily know where the person is going to be, where exactly, because they came from this hometown, and we might know that before the interview, but then maybe they start telling us about something over here. So we don't, we can't really preload stuff. We need to have, real time, be able to like go wherever the imagery can, find imagery for that place that they tell us. If that makes sense. But so with Google Earth, but if there are other sources that are out there like that, or something that where we could just download all of North Korea for all the imagery and just get all of it, and then, once a month update it or something, or once a year, whatever, that would be great. Yeah. But for right now, that's where we're at. Other questions? Yeah, go ahead, or I'll repeat your question. We did actually at Phosphor G in 2 years ago. I did talk with them some with Digital Globe. I'm sorry. The question was, did we talk to Digital Globe about, for example, getting free imagery from them? They have a time slider. We did talk with them. Yeah, a few years ago. Now that's a good question, and I think I should revisit that. If we can get, we would need to be able to get something ahead of time and get, because my understanding of the way they work is you sort of tell them, okay, here's a sector, you download all that. But if I could just download all of North Korea, that would be awesome. But I don't know,
I think you can just consume it as a service. So they'll provide a cleansed kind of view of the world that's got the best of all the imagery.
Uh-huh.
And you can just consume that as a service and then just slide back, so you wouldn't have to download anything potentially.
Okay.
So yeah, that might work for you.
Okay. This is good stuff. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's worth speaking to
someone. Yes, thank you.
More questions? We have a couple minutes maybe.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned spatial clustering. Have you done any temporal clustering to look and see if there's patterns in when the deaths have happened, if it was something to do with politics or a region?
Okay, that's a great question. We have not done anything with temporal clustering, or one of the challenges is the data, especially for the older, the memories that when someone is telling us something that happened 10, 20 years ago, usually the date we get is, very vague. It could be, if we're lucky, it's kind of like in this year, in this season, in this year. But even that, for something like what you're talking about, that actually it could work if you're trying to look at political things. We haven't done that yet, but I think we're starting to get to a point where we're getting more data now. We have over, 600 interviews. And so that type of a thing, yeah, I think one of the questions that we really are interested in, but we have a hard time from our data discerning, and that's partly just the way we were collecting it. So we're going to try to adjust when we restart interviews soon after, you know, after this report came out. We've taken a break, but is one of the questions is what are the number of public executions, are they going down or up, you know, like those types of things, or regionally how are they doing? And we don't have a random sample, so it's nobody has a random sample, so it's really hard to do that. But we're going to try and ask more, what would it be, qualitative questions, you know, better questions to try and get at that, to at people's sense of it anyway, you know, moving forward. But thank you.
Hey, one last question.
I saw this guy first.
When the results from the interviews, do you digitally encode and map information that's being pulled out through some sort of ethnographic process? Have you looked at starting to map those, you know, starting to get that qualitative information? So if you, I imagine when you're engaging with someone in an interview like that, they might start to refer to places about other things. They might talk about lots of different experiences in their life. It's not my background at all, but I've worked with people that done it, to try and maybe you want to tease out a number of threads as well as, you know, the locations or time of a specific event. They may allude to other things. And I'm a previous life have been interested in digitally capturing that information, because you may have people that talk about the same thing, but you don't realize it at the time when you're in the interview. And that there is, but it's an area of active research of then to try and map that. But it's very hard because it's not fixed quantitative data.
Yeah, thank you. I'd like to talk to you afterwards about that, if possible. Thank you. And one of the challenges, real quick, has been trying to, somebody tells us about a report and it's here, and then somebody else tells us about a report and it's pretty near there, but figuring out were they at the same event or not, because the dates are so vague, it's really hard to tell and deduplicate event data. Okay, thank you.
Are you going to stick around afterwards for the questions? Okay, great. All right. Well, Dan, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, a round of applause, Dan Bielefeld.
Thank you very much.